Hello, listeners. Jordan here. I just want to let you know that you can listen to Nighttime early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Include it with Prime.
According to the police officer I spoke to, they went through a list of questions in order to ascertain whether or not she was safe and determined that she was okay to be on her own on the streets of Victoria, barefoot in November, and they left her there. And that was the last time anyone ever saw her.
You are listening to Emma Filipoff is Missing, a series by the Nighttime Podcast.
When Emma Filipoff disappeared from a busy downtown Victoria, BC intersection in November of 2012, the effects were felt far and wide. For Emma's loved ones, on top of the heartbreak and the panic, they were left with the task of connecting the pieces left behind in hopes that they may lead to Emma, or at least to an answer. As we heard in the prior episodes, several promising leads appeared and kept those searching for Emma busy. There was the green shirt guy in Vancouver, the mysterious reappearance of Emma's prepaid credit card, and of course, the countless reports of possible sightings. But amongst all that, there was one lead in particular that presented a uniquely uncomfortable situation. The lead came in the form of an unread Facebook message that was sent to Emma's father in the months prior to her disappearance. The message was from a young man named Julian, who was a one-time acquaintance of Emma. In the message, Julian asked Emma's father for help getting in touch with Emma and included an apology for stalking her. As you can imagine, when someone says they've been stalking a now-missing young woman, people take notice. But this appeared even more problematic than that. As you heard discussed in the prior episodes, Julian didn't only state he had stalked Emma. He'd since joined the search team and had been working closely with Shelley. And beyond that, he'd moved from Emma's hometown of Perth to Victoria shortly after she did, and he didn't seem to have a very good reason why. Now, Julian's role in Emma's story could simply be an unfortunate coincidence that looks terrible. But many people have doubts about coincidences when they relate to missing, attractive young women. Anyone who's been following Emma's unfolding story should be well aware of tonight's guest.
So if you could just tell me who you are and what ties you so closely to the disappearance of Emma Filipoff.
I'm Julian, and I was a student in Perth for 2 years. During my first summer there, I met Emma, and we became friends. She then left Perth, and I was without news for just over a year until I saw her again in Victoria. Following her disappearance, I was involved in the search, and later on I became a suspect. I was portrayed on the Fifth Estate as a potential person of interest in the investigation. Ever since, I've been, in the aftermath of the episode, and people wondering exactly what my role in this whole story was.
Before we get to Julian, let me quickly tell you how this came about. As I was preparing the second episode in this series, I had contacted Julian and invited him to tell me about his time with Emma and to discuss the factors that have led so many to considering him a suspect in her disappearance. After connecting with him and explaining that I had no strong opinions or no proverbial axe to grind, he agreed to share his version of the events with me. I'm sure many people listening will be surprised to hear Julian speaking here, as his connection to this story has quite literally forced him into isolation. But Julian's reasons for speaking out are quite clear. His belief is that those who suspect him do so on, at best, incomplete and at worst, misleading information that was provided by the Fifth Estate documentary, Finding Emma. And now it's Julian's time to clear the air. Tonight, in this episode of the Nighttime series, Emma Filipoff is Missing, we're going to be joined by Julian.
first thing I'd like to ask, Julian, if you could tell me about how and when you first met Emma.
I first met Emma in July of 2011 in Perth, Ontario. There was a music festival going on that weekend. I saw her right away when I entered the site. She was in the booth of a photographer. For some reason, even from a distance, she caught my eye, so I walked into the booth, and while I wouldn't say that I pretended to be interested by the photographer's work, because it was actually very good work and quite interesting, but I mostly went in to see who this person was. So we talked for a bit with the photographer to each other. At some point, I asked the photographer if it would be all right to ride my bike to his studio outside of town at some point to see more of his work. And she was kind of listening and showing interest. And soon after, we left the booth. But then, not very long after that, she came to me asking me a question about whether or not I was going to the indoor concert that night. And then I asked her if she would be interested in visiting this photographer by bike someday. And she said, "Oh yeah, I would be interested. I was actually thinking about asking you the same thing." And then she wanted to go the next day, which became kind of her habit over the next few weeks. She always wanted to do something the next day, but I had to tell her that the photographer would still be in his booth in the park until Sunday, so our visit to his place would have to wait until the week later. But anyway, so we in the end, instead of going on a bike ride, we ended up canoeing. So I met her on a Friday night at that concert, and then we went canoeing the next day. Anyway, it was a great weekend, but then she got an eye infection that night, and I didn't really see her for another week after that while she was getting better at home with a patch. Yeah, so we spent a fair amount of time together that weekend, and we kind of realized right away that we had a few things in common, and we kind of felt like we, I guess, knew each other more than we actually did.
I understand from there you had, I believe, about a month together in Perth. Were you hung out occasionally, or was it longer than a month?
Yeah, no, I would say that's about a month. In total, including Victoria, I don't think I saw Emma more than 15 times. Mainly we walked. Mostly we walked at night. Typically she would be mostly barefoot, not always, and she would be carrying her little ukulele. And we would walk all night, her carrying the ukulele, playing the same chord over and over. I think she only knew one. And chatting about different things, about her trips, about her little bit of time in China, having lived in Nova Scotia for a while her sister was studying there. Yeah, so she would tell me different stories like that, but she was never asking personal questions. She just liked to be around people for who they were, who they are, not without spending much time trying to learn their history. She, for some reason, she either didn't want to or didn't have the ability, if I can say, to plan a week or two ahead of time. I don't know what it was, but it certainly was interesting to always wanting to do something the next day, which was kind of nice for me because, well, I was more than happy to do something the next day, but at the same time, it was kind of an interesting way. I never met anybody like that.
Now, there's been lots of talk and speculation about how your relationship with Emma ended back in Perth. Can you talk me through how things were resolved between you both, in Perth?
Yeah, well, listening to your podcast the other day, there was a discussion about what our relationship was about, or maybe that the relationship was just in my mind. And those are things that I've discussed with police and family members before. There was no relationship beyond friendship. I mean, I never really liked being called an acquaintance because I think that there was more to us than that, even though I'm not even quite sure what the actual definition of an acquaintance is, but I think it would be fair to call us friends. I never really knew what Emma was thinking of me, so we certainly were not in any kind of relationship, but she took me to her home, she took me to her mother's home outside of Perth. I met her brother, I met her younger brother, we went for hikes in the woods, and we brought our dog. I think calling us friends is only fair. Most of the time we would just, like I said, we would just walk and talk, but then one night which must have been late again, always was pitch dark. We just sat on a bench near the tracks, and she tucked her nose in my neck, and I couldn't help it, so I kissed her, and it kind of went on for a while. Eventually we got up and walked a little bit more, and she took my hand, and I was kind of surprised how the night had turned out. Anyway, we went back to our own places, and I didn't see her the next day, and then the day after that I called, and or she called, I don't remember that part, but to say that we probably got a little carried away the other night, that she liked me, but that since she was not gonna stay in town for very long, she didn't want to get attached to me or anyone, and that it would be better if we stopped seeing each other. Before hanging up, she said, I prefer if you don't call again, or something like that. But then I was all night, I was working night shifts on Fridays, and I couldn't imagine how I would spend the night just running this around in my head. So I called again. I called her, and then her father said, Emma just told you she didn't want you to call. So I said, well, please, just one last time. I just want to have her give me a few more explanations. And she did take the phone. She was kind of not rude, but kind of cold at first, saying, well, I think I answered all the questions. But then she kind of softened a little bit, and we talked for maybe 10, 15 minutes. When we hung up, I was feeling much better, even though it was still the same thing. It would be better off not to see each other again. And but at least it seems like the second phone call sounded better than the one before, and that was the very last time that I called her parents or her father's house. I thought that was the last time that I was talking to her, but then the next morning the phone rang, and that's Emma, who says, well, I don't like how I dealt with things last night. Would you mind if I stop by your place? So she did stop by at the house where I was staying, and we talked on the porch for maybe half an hour. Well, that was really nice. Once again, it was still the same story. Better if we stopped seeing each other, but at least it was done face to face. And we hugged, and we said how nice it was to have known each other, and kind of wish each other's good luck. And that was it. But then there's no way to know what she was thinking, because the next night I'm in the living room reading a book, and suddenly someone knocks on the door, and the lady I was living with goes to answer and says, well, Julian, Emma's here for you. She's standing at the door with her ukulele, and she wants to go for a walk. And it's like, but I mean, Emma wants to go for a walk. You put your shoes on and you go. I was so confused, but at the same time, I was happy to see her again. And, so we went for that walk, and I was more confused than ever, and I didn't know what to talk about. And at some point I said something that kind of insulted her or that she didn't like. I just couldn't keep the silence. And for some reason I asked her about her pants and why she never wore shorts or skirts or why she always wore long pants, even though it had been a very hot summer. And anyway, depending on my choice of word, she didn't like the question. It was not a question that I should have asked. There must have been a reason why she was always wearing the same clothes. She was not your average woman who is wearing something different every day. And Well, basically, she felt more comfortable the way she dressed, and that was none of my business. But for some reason, I asked the question, and she was not, well, she was not impressed. So she became really, really cold after that, and we walked a little bit more. But then she said, I'd rather finish my walk alone if you don't mind. And that was kind of annoying because the morning before, I kind of liked how we handed things up. And that night, then I felt like, well, this might be it, but I didn't feel too good about how it all ended. So, and I was heading home to Gaspé for 2 weeks the next day. So I wrote a little card, and I dropped it off at the coffee shop where she used to work, and she had a couple of friends working there. I just wanted to say, well, sorry for being so awkward and for asking something that I really should not have asked. And yeah, so I went home. I went home for 2 weeks, and not really knowing if I would see her again. But for some reason, I was kind of looking forward to, even though I enjoyed my time back home, I was kind of looking forward to go back to Perth. And but then I went back to Perth, and I didn't see her for maybe a week or so. And that's when the coincidences kind of started. One night, someone drives me home, and I was working on a farm for the summer, and he drives me home after at the end of the day, and just in front, just at the top of the hill, I see a girl, a woman walking barefoot, but wearing jeans, and I'm thinking, well, that looks like Emma, but except for the jeans. So I get home and jump on my bike, and I think, well, I'll go see who that is. But before I could make it to the top of the hill, Emma came out around the corner, walking out of the street where she lived. But it was kind of weird how it happened, where I just see this other person who reminds me of her, and then she shows up. I asked her if it was okay to walk with her, and she was not too keen. She hadn't liked the fact that I had bothered to dropped the card for a friend to give to her. She said that I was not patient enough or something like that, that maybe we were not as similar than we didn't have as much in common as she first thought. But I kind of insisted to walk with her just to explain myself. So we walked for a little bit, and she started to listening and talk, and things were looking better. And even though I wanted to keep walking with her, at some point I said, do you want to finish your walk alone? I think I'm just going to go home. And she said, no, you can stay. And then we walked a little bit further, and then we hugged and said goodbye, and we both felt that was possibly the last time that we see each other, and that was the last time I saw her in Perth. And even though that walk started out with her being kind of cold and well, not interested in talking, it ended up like all these other nights when it was just great to be in her company.
And from there, do you know, like, how long was it after that to the point that she moved from Perth, or do you remember hearing about her moving?
No, I never heard. Since we didn't have cell phones, we could not text. She never tried to contact me. I had no way to contact her. One day, I was riding my bike in that residential area where the bench where we had kissed was. I just wanted to see how that place looked like in the daytime, because, like I said, every place seemed like a special place with Emma in the nighttime. But so I went around by bike, and then there was her father walking a big black dog. So I asked her, is Emma gone? And he said, yes, I believe she went out west as planned or something like that. So that was as much as I knew. I never wrote to James, to her father while in Perth, but I had sent a couple Facebook messages to her mother, because since I knew her father, I knew her brother, her young brother, I had met the dogs, I had been to her house. It would have been nice to know who she was, since so many people had told me about her. So I sent her a couple Facebook messages, which I later learned she never read until much later after I left her. But basically, I was just asking her to have a little chat, and I was just curious to meet her. And I'm sure I would have been tempted to ask about news of Emma, but since I never met her, I never heard about Emma after last seeing her. I knew she was gone. I didn't know when she was gone and or where. And the next time I heard from her was when I saw her in Victoria.
Now, what is it that led you to move from Perth to Victoria? Why did you choose there?
Well, I spent an awful lot of time debating about where I was going. I thought it was kind of a neat feeling to finish school and knowing that I could go anywhere on the map. I had found out while in school I was studying woodworking that I was kind of allergic to wood dust, which is kind of impractical, to kind of inconvenient for a woodworker. And I had been doing a lot of paddling. I started considering more and more going west so I could paddle year round and work outside. And I analyzed statistics of climate and all kind of things in Canada, bicycle. I don't drive. I thought that being out west I could commute by bike year round and not have to depend on bus schedules and so there were many reasons that led me to go there. But I was mostly thinking about Vancouver Island. But my plan was to go somewhere like Bamfield, I had heard, or some remote corner of the island. I had heard that half of the town of Bamfield had no car at all, and that was very appealing to me. But it took me so long to decide on where to go, and I was kind of in no rush to leave Perth, but I knew that I would leave by, well, late summer, early fall. And then to go to a place like Bamfield, which is in the middle of nowhere on the coast, might be a bit risky to find work. So I started considering Victoria, where I could at least find a job there for the winter and then hopefully move on in the spring. And I was still debating about where to go. It could have been Victoria, it could have been Nanaimo, it could have been Campbell River. I didn't know much about these towns at all, but I was kind of all considering all the options. And then I found out that this Irish band, which I've been trying to see for many years, was coming to Victoria, and that was it. I had been debating for a while where to go, and I had to make a move. And so I chose Victoria. I figured, well, I'll go to the concert, I'll find a job. I contacted an outdoor store in town, and they basically said, as soon as you get to Victoria, stop for an interview. And then the lady who owned the farm while I was working in Perth had a friend who lived in Victoria. He was a doctor in Victoria, and he had been renting rooms apparently in the past, and she gave him a call, and he was still interested in renting me a room. Yeah, so for all these factors, I chose to go to Victoria. I arrived on August 27th. And started working on August 29th or something like that. So it all happened pretty quick.
And that was August of 2012?
August of 2012, yeah.
Oh, okay. And so now with you in Victoria starting work at this the outdoor sporting goods store that you mentioned, at this point you had no idea that Emma was living in Victoria. Is that right?
No. Once again, she could have been anywhere. But yeah, as far as I knew, she was out west. I mean, to be honest with you, I was hoping I would see Emma again one day. But yeah, that was just a hope I had. I certainly didn't choose, maybe unconsciously. I mean, she had told me how nice Vancouver Island was, how nice the weather was. She had asked me to maybe travel west with her. So maybe in the back of my mind, it influenced my choice to travel west, but it was mostly for personal reason, climate, work, the ability to paddle year-round. She could really be anywhere. But when I, that first morning, my first morning in Victoria, when I went and walked to my, well, to the store where I was end up working, just around the corner, there was this little store with love, peace, and freedom written on the stairs and some interesting, free-flowing, colorful clothing in the windows. And I had this thought that if Emma was in Victoria, this is probably the kind of place she would have gone to. But I mean, this was just a thought. I never thought that she would be there. So I had no way to know where she was, but I did think about her that day when I saw that that store. And a month later, that's the exact spot where I saw her.
Yeah. No. So, can you tell me, or can you describe this first time you ran into her in Victoria?
I was. It was Sunday. It was a beautiful October day. It was my lunchtime. I went to a coffee shop where I'd never been before and grabbed a sandwich. And on my way back, I saw someone who really looked like her. And I had left my glasses at the store, so I was kind of leaning over and squinting, trying to make sure it was really Emma, and she was doing this. She was doing the same thing. For some reason, we kind of spotted each other from across the street at the same time. We kind of stayed there frozen for a second, and then it was me who eventually crossed the street, and I didn't quite know what to say or what to do. We were both shocked, and she was smiling, so. That was good, but then she was the first one to hug me. I was kind of keeping my distance and saying hi and what are you doing here, but I didn't want to push it since I didn't quite know what her reaction would be to suddenly see me like that. But she was super happy to see me. She gave me a hug. She said that she had she kept saying wow and how strange it was because she had been thinking about me not that long ago. It only lasted about 10 minutes because I had to go back to work, and I didn't ask where she lived. I didn't ask where she worked, but I didn't ask any personal information. I told her where I was working, which was just, well, two doors down, and then she asked me what days that she would stop to see me sometime, and I asked her if it would be, if she would like to stop and meet me at 5 after we closed so we could go for a bite. And she said I don't know, you know that I never plan very far ahead. So even though it was maybe 1 o'clock, she really didn't know how her afternoon or how her evening would be like. But she was super happy to see me, smiling, hugging me twice before I left, and I was on a cloud. The surprise was so big, and she looked just the same as she did in Victoria, back in Perth. It was a beautiful sunny day. I've told the police, I've told Shelley, I've told everyone. Those were the 10 best minutes of my life, and even though everything after that became very dark and sad and shocking and a nightmare, I wouldn't trade those 10 minutes for anything. It was great. I was on the cloud for about a week after that.
Now, when you met there, you spoke for a few minutes outside the near your work. You hadn't officially made any plans. Was it just left with, you know, this is the days I work, this is where I work, come by sometime? Is that how it ended?
Yeah, well, the only plan was, well, I work until 5. If you want to go to grab something to eat, stop by and see me then. Or otherwise, she kind of let it sound like she would stop by and see me in the next few days. And I was actually off the next couple of days. I was kind of looking forward to go back to work on Wednesday because I had told her that I was working Wednesdays to Sundays. I was kind of looking forward to go back to work, hoping she would stop by. And it seems like every time someone walked into the store, I would look, hoping that it would be her walking in. But that never happened. And I didn't ask her where she lived or where she worked, because I was, I guess, knowing myself, I figured that if I did, I might be tempted to stop by her work and say hi. I really wanted her to, unlike in Perth where I had her home phone number and I knew where she lived, in Victoria I didn't have a clue, and I figured that if she wanted to see me, and she surely sounded like it, she would know where to find me. And that was right downtown. That was easy to get to. But then I started thinking about this concert coming up November 1st, and I had been waiting to see this Irish band for so long, and I thought this will be an awesome night, and it would be even more awesome. It would be perfect if Emma would come with me. And even though I thought this is probably a bad idea, but I sent a Facebook message to her father, saying I'm a little bit desperate. I was really hoping to see Emma again so I could invite her to that concert in 3 days. If you are in touch with her at all, you can let her know that I'd like to invite her. She can just stop by my she can just stop at work or send me an email. And I never heard back.
And we'll come back to this letter, because when he does find it, it's at an inconvenient time, and this letter has led to a lot of the speculation that's cast on you. So we'll come back to that. So now, after you saw Emma outside or near your work, you wanted to invite her to the concert, never had the chance to do it in person, so you sent the Facebook message to her father, which ended up in his other folder until much later into this story. So now, after not hearing back from Emma after that first encounter, and you probably expecting she was either not interested in reuniting with you or something had changed, can you now tell me about the second time you ran into her and when that happened?
Yeah, it was, I don't know the exact date, but it was not very long after the concert was supposed to be November 1st. And a few days later, I'm walking out of, or I'm at the library, rather. Suddenly, I see this person walk by, just by kind of the corner of my eye, and it kind of looks like Emma. And she walks out, and I follow behind and kind of walk a little bit faster so I can step in front of her and have a good look. And I say, well, so it is Emma. So I start, I say hi, and then I could tell that she was not Emma. That night was very sad, very dark, or maybe not sad, but looked tired. And that's what she said: I'm very tired, I'm going home. She didn't want. I said, did you recognize me in there? She said, yeah, you look familiar, which is kind of weird considering that she recognized me the last time from across the street, and now she's a few feet away, and it's like, you look familiar. Anyway, it was not fun. It only lasted maybe 2 minutes. I said the same thing: if you need help with anything, or if you want to see me, you remember where I work, so I left, and she left behind the library. I later found out that she was that she had been staying at Sandy Merriman at the shelter at different times, and that's where, well, the shelter is somewhere out there behind the library, so that's probably where she was staying at the time. So early to mid November. I never, weirdly enough, even though I went to that library often before and after. I mean, every town I traveled to, the library is a place I often go. And even though I saw her that night there, I never thought of making a point of going back the next few days, because while I think Emma was had her routines, like she would walk and she would go to the coffee shop when in Perth, I could have thought that she would go back to the library more quite often and made a point of going, but I never thought about that. So that was the last time. Well, that was the second time that I saw her in Victoria. And unlike our first meeting, that was really nice and all smiles. I didn't know what was going on, but there was obviously something going on.
Okay. And now, so that was the second time you ran into her in Victoria, and this would have been the beginning of November, I think you said. Do you recall the rough?
Yeah, it was a few days. It was a few days after the concert had been canceled.
Okay. And then from that point, can you now lead into the third, and at this point in time would be the final, your final encounter with Emma? Could you tell us about that?
Yes, it happened, from what we later found out, or for a while I was debating whether it was November 27th or November 28th. Eventually, looking at Facebook pictures where I had been kayaking on the 27th, I had to narrow down that it was the 28th that I took the bus that morning, heading downtown to the government building to bring in my healthcare form. And which I hadn't taken care of yet. And while standing on the bus, even though we were, moving at maybe not a high speed, but the bus was moving, heading downtown. And then I saw this person on the sidewalk facing the road, who kind of looked like Emma, even though it didn't quite look like her. But out of curiosity, I got off the bus a few stops earlier and then walked by her. But since she was standing right on the curb, basically facing the street, so the only way to look at her in the face would have been to stand on the road. So I just walked beside and behind her a couple of times, and I couldn't tell, but actually I was more sure that it wasn't her, because I mean, her hair, I'd never seen her hair like that. It was like a mane. They were very wild, kind of all over the place. Usually her hair were, somewhat straight, always long, or all tucked in a hat or something like that. But that time it was like a lion's mane. And she had a big jacket on, with somewhat puffy, with a fur hood, and all kind of bags, plastic bags, shoulder bags, in her hands, on her shoulders, and I didn't think it was her, so I walked back to the government building to hand in my form, and a few minutes later I stepped out, and the woman was still, I didn't move, was still there on the curb facing the sidewalk, or facing the road, rather, and this time I stepped on the road and looked at her in the face, and it was Emma, and she didn't look, I guess her face looked like her, but everything else about her looked different. And I didn't ask, I don't think I asked, how are you, because it didn't seem like the appropriate question. It was pretty obvious that she was probably not doing all that great. I asked, do you want to talk? And she just shook her head. She didn't say no or anything. She just shook her head. I really didn't have a clue what to do. So I just said what I had said the last time at the library. If you need help with anything, or if you want to talk, you know where to find me. And I walked away. But then I stopped at a bus shelter, maybe 100 meters away, and I just lean on the bus shelter there for a few minutes, wondering what to do. She didn't look well, but she also looked like someone who might be waiting to catch a ride with someone. So maybe a friend was about to pick her up. I didn't know what to do at all. I considered going back to talk to her again. I thought about staying there to see what her next move would be. I don't think I really thought about calling someone. I was mostly thinking about either staying there and seeing our next move, or moving away, and that's what I did. I back in Perth and now here in Victoria, I could never tell what she was thinking, and to see her in that state and to always she would always lead me to have these kind of happy moments and sad moments, and I didn't know, since she hadn't stopped by the store, and now to see her in that state, I was kind of, it was such a contrast to October 7th when I saw her, and it was all smile, and it was awesome, and I just decided to walk away, and kind of, I was thinking in my head, literally, I'm done with you. If I next time I see you, I'm not gonna stop. I'm not sure if I would have managed to do that, but that was my plan that morning. I thought, I don't think there's anything I can do for you. I mean, I knew, yeah, she seemed like the kind of person who would not accept help. And so I thought, yeah, I'm walking away. If she shows up at the store wanting to talk, yeah, for sure I'm going to talk. But otherwise, I'm never going to make any effort. Since it was the third time in 3 months that I was seeing her in Victoria, I figured that I might very well see her again. But I kind of made a commitment with myself that the next time I would just walk by, or I would certainly not get off a bus to go talk to her, that I was basically done with her. And but things turned out to be I was all but done, because that was November 28th, and then basically December that year was all about Emma.
Now, so that, again, November 28th, the last day that she is seen, you run into her that morning. She appears unwell, but not to the point that you felt like there was an emergency, that something had to be done. When is it from there that you first heard of her disappearance? How long after this that word made it to you?
A few days later, early December, I wanted to move into a new room somewhere closer to town than where I was staying. I had found a few places I wanted to go visit. And then I got an email that morning while still at home from the lady where I used to work in Perth, telling me that she woke up to the news on local radio back in Perth that Emma was missing. I thought it was kind of a weird to be considered missing within 5 days, because, well, I thought she was elusive enough that she could go on for much longer than that without giving news to anyone. So I didn't quite understand why she would be considered missing, since I had seen her only a few days before. And also because, well, I was just... I didn't want to be worrying about it anymore, or I basically didn't want to be thinking about Emma at this point. And I already wanted to get my, not my life back, but the first 2 months in Victoria had started out so well, and now November had been rather dark and sad, and I was thinking, well, if I find a new place to live, closer to town, with maybe rent a room and with people my age, it might be help me get involved a bit more in that city. So I left town and went, not left town, left home and went visiting a few apartments, but none of them were great. So I went back to the downtown library to go back to the computer. I don't have a laptop. I didn't have a cell phone at the time, so my only computer access was either at home or at the library. That's why I went quite often. And I walked in there, and Shelley says that she looked at me and got up and came to talk to me. I don't know if it's that important who saw who first, but the way I remember, and I remember it very clearly, I walked in, and yes, there were a lot of people sitting in front of those computers, but I saw this woman. And I had been, well, when I sent her that message on Facebook a year earlier, I got to see her profile picture, and there was also a picture of her standing with her son at graduation, I guess. So I got to see a couple pictures of her, but that's all I knew of her. But I saw this woman there, And I approached her and I said, are you Emma's mom? And she got off that chair very quickly and said, and kind of asked me if I knew anything, or, and I just said, I'm Julian, and I'm a friend of Emma. I knew her from Perth. We talked a little bit, and then she said that she was on her way to the coffee shop, where there was a friend of Emma that was there, along with one of his friends, and they were getting a Facebook page started, and that I should go and meet them there a little bit later that day. And, well, I went there, met them, and for the next few weeks, I was part of that research team, I guess we can call it. I was working full-time, but I was as involved as I could be every night after work or during my lunchtime. I would stop by the coffee shop, which was basically the main place where I used to grab my lunches. It was just a block or just around the corner from my job, so very close to the store where I worked. And so I would see there all the time. That ended up being their headquarters for the next month or so. So I would, if I didn't see Shelley, I would pretty much talk to her almost every day for updates and that kind of thing. Soon after that, I don't think I got dropped off the team, but I dropped myself and lost my motivation when they started to have their doubts about me.
Now, can you talk about, I understand that you at one point in time were polygraphed by the police and were questioned by the police. Can you talk about how the tide turned to you being considered a person of interest to the point that you were polygraphed?
Yeah, well, it started out one day when I walked at the library again, and Shelley just happened to be there. She was finishing sending some emails. Not long after I sat down, she said, "Look at me in the eye, Julian, and tell me that you didn't follow Emma all the way here to Victoria." She said, Emma's father just found out about this Facebook message that you sent him, and I swear that I hadn't followed her to Victoria." But and yeah, that was just a hard moment there, because I felt so stupid using the word stalking. I felt not stupid, but I felt hurt, because even though I understood what was going on, I had been quite involved, and to be asked like this, "Did you follow Emma?" and all the things that we've said, or is that all the thing we talked about, was that true, or was that all a lie? And that was shocking and hurting. And even though it made sense for her to ask me that, I knew what the truth was, and it was still hard to accept. And she, after kind of things settled down a little bit, she asked me if I wanted to go check a few places and ask them about security cameras that had been, if there was any footage that would be available of Emma. Because unlike the police, Shelley said that she had all the time in the world to go through that footage and maybe see something. So I went there, and I did a few hotels and restaurants near the Empress Hotel where Emma was last seen. But that night I wrote to Shelley to say, "Well, I'm pretty much done. I could not. I was, yeah, the energy was gone and the motivation was gone." I said, "If there's any serious lead and you need someone to look into it, call me." But I was not going to be there day to day anymore.
Now, when did the police become involved to the point that you were polygraphed?
Yeah, well, a few weeks later, or maybe even a couple of months later. I think it was in February, so it would be like a month later. I got a call from Victoria Police, and they asked me if I could stop by the police station for an interview. And I did, and the interview lasted about at least an hour and a half. And we talked about a lot of the things we're talking about now. And obviously he asked me to explain why I had used the word stalking. I don't know exactly why I came up with that word. I mean, everybody who's listening can tell that English is not my mother tongue. It's not my first language. I misused the word. I never stalked her in any way. And the only reason why I use the word is that I'm not, I guess the word crush is maybe not quite appropriate, but I don't usually make that kind of effort to keep in touch with anyone. And I just found that I called a few times too many, even though she would tell me that it was no problem, that her father was okay with it. I would call, and then she would be gone for coffee, or she was having a nap, or she would be in the shower, and her father would say, "Well, call again in 10 minutes," and that's what I would. And that's what I would do. I just felt like I called too many times, more often than I was comfortable with. And then bringing that letter or that card to her friend at the coffee shop, even though it's very, there's nothing wrong with that. Thinking about it afterward, I was not very comfortable with it. I wish I had let her come to me more. So anyway, I used the word stalking, and when I explained what I just said to the police, they said, "Well, we have our definition of stalking and you have yours. They don't have anything to do with each other. What you're describing here is not stalking by any stretch." And we had a good conversation. All of it was filmed. For a while, the guy who had interviewed me left to discuss it, I guess, with someone else. And he finally came back and said, "You are free to go." So I left, and that was pretty much the end of it for a while. That was in February 2013. By the time November, by the time fall of November 13 came around, and sometime around the second week of November, probably, I was at home, and then two police showed up on my doorstep. They introduced themselves as being RCMP officers, and they said, "Well, the case had been passed over from Vic Police to the RCMP, and they wanted me to do a polygraph, a lie detector. That it would be a very good way to clear my name and finally be left alone if I accepted to do it, but that I didn't have to." And so we scheduled the polygraph for December 5th. November 28th went by. As expected, it was a tough, was a very sad day. And then December 5th came around, and I showed up at the RCMP station for the polygraph that afternoon. Lasted about 3 hours probably in total. Weirdly enough, the polygraph was not so much about stalking, but really about murder. They kept asking me from every possible angle if I had been involved in her murder and things like that. It was I thought they would be asking me. I thought the whole thing would be about stalking and following her, but in the end, it was more about whether or not I had murdered her. And I. Those were shocking, very absurd questions to be asked. I don't drive. I didn't have a car. All I did around Victoria was ride the bus or ride my bike. I was renting a room in someone's house, and I was living with them on the same floor and seeing and talking to them every day. I didn't have any friends or not, except for co-workers in Victoria at the time. So there was no way. It just seemed so absurd that I could have pulled something like that. There was no way I could set something up like that. And the questions were just having murdered her. And when I left, I asked the officer, I said, "Are you going to leave me alone from now on, or there's a chance that you will contact me again?" And he said no. He said basically, even though we focused on only a few questions, it was enough to give us a very clear idea of your, well, whether or not you had been involved in hurting Emma in any way. So that was the end of it.
Now, do you, with your relationship with Emma and knowing her as a person, do you have any opinion on what may have happened, or do you think there's the possibility that maybe she went missing on purpose?
I don't know. I never wanted to believe in kidnapping because that was too bad a scenario. I didn't believe in suicide at first because I didn't think it was possible. But after listening to the Fifth Estate and hearing her say the page in her diary where she mentions that she knows someone will be reading this, and I'm not so much focused on I'm dead, Emma, but more about I know someone will be reading this, and I cannot imagine at any time Emma being okay with people reading her computer or reading her diaries. To me, that made me think that she was planning on committing suicide, because I can't imagine her being in a world where people would know that kind of stuff, unless she had planned on disappearing very far. Yeah, I really don't know. There's no good scenario. If she's dead, I'm sad that I'll never see her again. And if she's still alive, I just hope that she's in a good enough place.
Now, for anyone listening to this that had been unaware that you had seen her the morning of the 28th, the last day she was seen, people are going to ask what your activity was during that day and that night. Do you recall what you did that night or where you were?
All I know is that I was somewhere, probably on the bike, somewhere on the bus, or somewhere at home. But I could never say for sure where I was that night. I was probably home because I was working the next day. But I think the facts are clear enough that I was not involved, except that I saw her that last day, and instead of standing there to find out what wrong was going on, I walked away, and I didn't help. I walked away.
If you're still with me, I want to thank you for giving Julian the time to share his side of the story. If you are like me and went into this after watching his portrayal on CBC's Finding Emma documentary, you probably have some pretty strong feelings about Julian before we started. But for what it's worth, my personal opinion is that in hearing Julian's side of the story, it casts his possible involvement in a much different light. If what Julian says is true, and I have no reason to doubt him, he seems to suffer a similar fate to many other wrongfully accused people. Except, instead of a prison sentence, he simply had a finger pointed at him on a popular documentary that was broadcast across Canada on CBC and around the world on YouTube. Going forward, I personally don't consider Julian among the possible explanations of Emma's whereabouts or her fate, and I've yet to hear a reasonable argument that goes against that. So, I suppose we have to move on from here, with many big questions still remaining. But as far as my personal list of points to consider goes, Julian's name's not on it. Emma's whereabouts and an explanation for her disappearance are still shrouded in mystery. But everything I've heard tells me one thing that is irrefutable. Something unique and seemingly dysfunctional was happening within Emma. As her mother Shelley said back in part one, many of her behaviors could be symptoms of an undiagnosed mental illness. But despite that, many others have different explanations and suspect Emma may have in fact had reasons grounded in reality to fear for her safety and or simply to flee Victoria. And that's what we're going to examine in the upcoming four episodes of this series. We will speak with four close friends of Emma's from four unique parts of her life. Hopefully, by better understanding who Emma is and how her personality evolved throughout her life, we can perhaps better understand the young woman who was found shoeless and barefoot on a busy intersection on November 28th, 2012.
This sort of intimate character study will start in the next episode of this series, as we will meet with Emma's childhood best friend, Ellen.
She kept journals when she was quite young, and that was always something that was quite private, like differing from her coming into my world and coming into my room, and sort of everything was fair game. That's something that I never would have done, is to go into her room and open her art book or open up one of her journals without her even having to say that. It was really quite clear that was a line, and that she had elements of her life that was just for her.
And with that, we will conclude this episode of the nighttime series, Emma Filipov is Missing. But now, before we wrap things up, I'm going to end with some thanks. A massive thank you goes to Julian for allowing me to help him share his story. Julian, I feel Emma's story, like many other missing person cases, has many victims. In this story, I feel you received an unfair shake from many people. You may be a little awkward and a bit eccentric, but I truly believe you have deep, genuine feelings about Emma. My only hope is that this episode helps illuminate the full story. So thank you, Julian. Next, a big thank you goes out to Vox Somnia and Paragon Cause for providing the musical and ambient themes for this series. And lastly, the biggest thanks of all goes out to everyone listening. Without you, the sun surely would have rose on nighttime years ago. For anyone out there who wants more nighttime, please consider supporting my Patreon campaign. For $1 a month, you can access the ad-free premium feed, which provides early releases of the episodes. And then, for only a couple dollars more, you can access the Nightcap After Show, in which I and the guests climb even further down the rabbit holes than what you'll hear in the main episodes. You can join my Patreon and support the show by visiting patreon.com/nighttimepodcast. With that said, I want to thank the newest members to the Patreon group, Mike Menzel and Matt Hutchinson. Thanks, pals. And for anyone else who'd like to support the show but can't help me financially, you can give me a big hand by telling your friends about me and leaving a positive review on Apple Podcasts or whichever equivalent you use. If anyone listening wants to stay up to date with my activities on and off the show, follow me on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. I use the handle @nighttimepod. If you have any story ideas or want to give feedback on the show, I'd love to hear from you at nighttimepodcast@gmail.com. Now, until next time, take care of each other, hug your loved ones tight, and contact me on social media and give me your theory on Emma Filipov's disappearance.
The Nighttime Podcast is written, hosted, and produced by Jordan Bonaparte. Copyright Jordan Bonaparte.
Somebody somewhere knows something. She didn't just disappear. She couldn't just vanish. Somebody has to know something, Jordan. Somebody has to know something.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.